From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I'm funding Erica Harold. I'm giving her $1 million. It's a lot of money for me, but I need her to win. Lisa Madigan has defended the corruption of her dad. Erica Harold will prosecute Madigan and the corruption. She's awesome.
Sir, are you alleging that he has committed a crime? And also, how would she prosecute? Because that office can only refer crimes.
So, attorneys general's job is to enforce the law and investigate wrongdoing, especially in state government. The attorney general's job is to represent the people of Illinois as their chief prosecutor and legal representative. Erica Harold will make that happen, and that's my point.
Governor Rauner goes after his favorite target, the House Speaker, Michael Madigan, and injects himself into another statewide race, this one for Attorney General. The governor also had some harsh words for Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel this week, and we'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. In studio with me, Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in studio, Daisy Contreras, who is the Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter. And in our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey, IPR Statehouse editor. And our guest today is Bernie Schoenberg of the State Journal Register. He's the political writer and columnist for the newspaper. And Bernie, good to have you on once again.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Let me start with you, both of you, in the downtown studios at our Statehouse Bureau, Brian and Bernie. The governor was speaking on a Southern Illinois radio station this week when he decided to sort of make some connection for why he would support Erica Harold, and he's apparently giving some money to her as well. Well, how did this all come about, and what all did he have to say?
Yeah, he was on. The radio host was asking him what sort of things he was going to do to ensure his reelection this fall. And he turned the conversation to Erica Harold, who's, of course, the Republican nominee for attorney general, said he was going to donate $1 million to her and said, he needs her to win. He said that the current incumbent attorney general, Lisa Madigan, who is not running for reelection, had quote, defended the corruption of her dad. The governor went on to say that Erica Harold will prosecute Madigan and the corruption. So later yesterday, Bernie and a couple of other reporters pressed the governor on exactly what that meant, what corruption meant. You know, I actually pulled out a dictionary here, right? There's the sense of corruption where something is morally unsound or debased, and then there's the other one where you're actually taking bribes and doing things that are illegal. And I'll let Bernie take it from what the governor's response was to that.
Well, I would just say, I asked him, how can you say, first of all, you're not supposed to like give a campaign donation and tell somebody to do something, or you expect them to do something in their public office. So that's kind of one question, although that would probably, given that they're of the same party and talking about general political things, probably get away with it. But, to say she will prosecute him puts her on the spot, but it also forced or gave me the idea and others, you know, Governor, what are you talking about? What illegal are you saying he has done? Clearly, the governor who has made Mike Madigan the punching bag for just about every political argument for the last 3-4 years, you know, doesn't like the fact that Mike Madigan has a law firm that helps building owners in Chicago lower their property taxes by filing the appeals. And the governor has actually filed some kind of a executive order or whatever that limits, you know, how much those attorneys can do at a higher level of that appeal. But he's not saying that, or he can't say that Mike Madigan has done anything illegal. Mike Madigan has never been charged with anything, and yet every ad that the governor runs, it seems, talks about, you know, Chicago is this cesspool of corruption and the machine. And, you know, there's even this ad that calls Madigan the most corrupt politician or the most corrupt elected person in America. So it's hyperbole, yes, but where is it coming from? He didn't really have a good answer other than, well, we know Illinois is based on corruption, and Madigan shouldn't be able to have a property tax practice. That all just still, I think, shows that perhaps the guy on the radio in Southern Illinois should have asked him a follow-up question like, what are you talking about here when you say she will prosecute him?
Well, when we can talk more about Erica Harold in a moment and the impact for her that some statements like this have, but it's clear to see, Charlie, what the governor is trying to do here, too. He is trying to get his base, that, well, at least the conservative base, fired up. They don't like Michael Madigan. He's trying to get them ready to come out. He's basically, you know, using any opportunity he can to do it. Is it effective? Is it going to get that far right group that had left him in the primary to come back to him?
Well, I think there's more than just the conservatives who don't like Mike Madigan. There's probably a lot of people in the Democratic Party who don't like Mike Madigan. Bruce Rauner's problem is that there are almost as many people who don't like him. And so he's using Madigan as a foil to try and portray that unless I get elected for another 4 years so I can try and do all the stuff I couldn't get done in the first 4 years, you're going to have to put up with Madigan's corruption. And to me, it's ironic. He can't really lay out one specific thing that he thinks Madigan has done that's illegal. And I might point out that when Patrick Fitzgerald was a U.S. attorney in Chicago, does anyone think that he didn't take a look at what Mike Madigan has done, look at Mike Madigan's legal practice and everything surrounding Madigan, and that if there were anything there that was actually a criminal offense, does anyone think that Patrick Fitzgerald would have given Michael Madigan a pass? I mean, that's ludicrous.
Yeah, and Sean and Brian alluded earlier to the fact that, you know, now Rauner is also criticizing Lisa Madigan, even though she's not running up for the post again, and by criticizing her for failing to root out, according to him, corruption in government.
Now, I'm sure Erica Harold appreciates, I think it's $1 million I heard was going to go to her campaign from Bruce Rauner. I'm sure she appreciates the check. She's running statewide. It's hard sometimes to raise money for these types of races. But does this bring her, Bernie, do you think this brings her like some unwanted attention, or is this any attention good when you're trying to, you know, to try to run and build your name ID?
Well, Illinois is still pretty much a blue state, so she has to kind of appeal to people in the middle. What she wants to do most of all is look independent. But when the governor has talked in the past about he, you know, talked her into running, and then she says, her side says, many people talked to me into running, and then he says, I'll give her $1 million and she will prosecute Madigan. You know, her spokesman yesterday said that she will investigate and pursue any allegations of wrongdoing or corruption and wants authority to maybe convene a statewide grand jury, but mentioned that she is thankful for the support of Bruce Rauner and many other people. So it does attack the idea of her independence if Bruce Rauner keeps talking about her as if she will be his public official that he has paid for, recruited, and is hoping will do just a certain kind of a thing.
And Brian,
we should maybe just emphasize that this is, you know, we hear a lot. I think that listening to, you know, my colleagues sort of grilling the governor in that news conference yesterday about this topic, it sort of reminded me of some of the conversations we're hearing nationally about the way President Trump has attempted to influence the actions of his own Attorney General Jeff Sessions. But we should point out there's some differences here, which is that the U.S. Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the president, whereas the Illinois Attorney General serves at the pleasure of the people. He or she is elected separately from the governor. There's also a distinction in that the U.S. Attorney General is explicitly the chief law enforcement officer, right? The FBI, the Department of Justice, all the prosecutors report to the federal attorney general, whereas in Illinois, the attorney general under the Constitution is the chief legal officer of the state, but the state police reports to the governor. The corrections department report to the governor. The attorney general is more like the head of a huge law firm that represents the state in its lawsuits and legal matters. It has some prosecutorial functions, primarily at the appeals level, but mainly prosecutions in this state are handled by the 102 state's attorneys in all the different counties in Illinois.
And Brian, I think those are good points. Can you also clarify the fact that, I mean, we're talking, he came out and basically said when she's elected, she's going to do this. Now, we hear people a lot of times saying they're going to support so-and-so. We hear candidates often say, when I'm elected, I'm going to root out corruption. I'm going to do this. Why is this such a big deal to people? Why is this more concerning to some people?
You mean in terms of what the governor has
said? Yeah, what the governor had to say.
Well, I think it's what Bernie was talking about earlier, which is that this is, you know, candidates like to portray themselves as being independent. And I think that, you know, when the governor says, I'm going to give someone $1 million and she's going to do X, Y, Z, that is not something I think most candidates would welcome, even if they welcome the money. They want to be seen as independent, particularly if you're in a job that requires independent and willingness to go against your party sometimes, such as Attorney General.
Yeah, and I think this has put an interesting spotlight just on Erica Herold, because I don't think yet we've mentioned the name of the Democratic candidate, State Senator Kwame Raoul. I mean, he was criticized even in how many candidates are running for Attorney General, like eight, for taking a lot of money from one donor who's in the tobacco industry. But Raoul, you know, was able to say that that doesn't influence me. I vote my conscience. Of course, we never heard whoever that donor was, you know, get on the radio in Southern Illinois or anywhere else and say, I want Kwame to do this with my money. So, you know, I'm sure that Erica Herold is in a tougher spot because of what the governor said this week, at least with some people.
And this just does go to, you know, the governor's. One of the main things that he has managed to achieve, where many have tried and failed before him, is to make House Speaker Michael Madigan one of the biggest political discussion and issues, you know, discussion points and issues in state politics. No candidate used to just be for the, you know, if you're running for House, but now pretty much every candidate has to talk about the so-called Madigan issue. More so often than they're talking about other issues that actually affect people, such as tax rates and how we fund schools in Illinois and things like that.
And Brian, I think also going back to Kwame Raoul, J.B. Pritzker, we believe he has given money, right, to Raoul's campaign?
Yes, I think
it's $50,000,
the Tribune reported this week. There's a little, I suppose you could say both sidism there, but I mean, it's obviously $50,000 is a much smaller donation than the $1 million going to that the governor says he's going to be giving to Erica Herold.
Well, it wasn't just Michael Madigan that got pushed this week by Governor Rauner. He also went after the Chicago mayor. It, of course, was a very violent week in the city of Chicago, getting a lot of national attention for shootings that took place there. And Rauner basically saying now Rahm Emanuel is corrupt and he has to go. And so, you know, just continuing this theme and continuing the drumbeat, we forget that these two at one point were pretty good buddies, I believe.
They were. There was that famous picture of them. I think the Sun-Times ran it, where the mayor was holding that, $100,000 bottle of wine because they would vacation together. The governor.
Well, I think you had to belong to the $100,000 wine club to get the wine. I don't think that particular bottle.
Thank you. Excellent point of fact and correction there, Bernie. But yes, these men, you know, this goes to show what I think some. People on the left have criticized Mayor Emanuel for is that he's very cozy with the business community. And there is a lot of fluidity among these top donors. Yes, they may favor, Republicans on some issues, Democrats on other issues, but everybody takes money from these top people. And, that's got the mayor getting attacked from both sides. But yeah, he is, you know, the governor really likes to use this word corrupt. I think that he uses it with less, legal precision than other politicians have felt compelled to do in the past. But it's, you know, it's basically his favorite word to describe Illinois politicians with whom he has fundamental ideological differences.
Yeah, if memory serves, I mean, Rahm Emanuel made a lot of money when he, I think, after being chief of staff to the president, working with Bruce Rauner and did a deal and made some millions of dollars, and this helped him, you know, launch a political career because he was in a financially better place. But it was also clear when Governor Rauner got into office 3 years ago and was pushing his turnaround agenda, some of the union weakening things that he wanted to do, he was hoping that the clout of the mayor of Chicago, through the pressure being applied, through, you know, programs not being funded or just, you know, the need for things, that he would get Rahm Emanuel's help. He didn't get it. And so things have soured along the way. They have, thrown verbal darts at each other. With the violence in Chicago, the governor, of course, Chicago is part of Illinois, but the governor is really blaming the mayor and city administration and the police there. On the other hand, some people say, you know, the 2-year budget impasse stopped funding or cut back funding for some social programs that could have helped reduce that violence. So obviously many people have opinions on that terrible situation.
And Daisy and Charlie, let me just ask you on this. I mean, Rahm Emanuel has a lot more problems than just Bruce Rauner. He's got people in his own party and many in the city of Chicago who are questioning his leadership as well. So this just in some ways, you know, I think we were saying before, there's people in the Democratic Party that may not like Michael Madigan, same thing for Rahm Emanuel.
That's right. I mean, you know, RAM has been seeing issues with the Chicago public school system there, the Chicago Police Department, and, you know, Rauner has been very vocal about calling out Emanuel, telling him that he hasn't given the Chicago Police Department enough support to do their jobs. Just a few weeks ago, if we recall, there was a major closing of an expressway in Chicago after people protesting coming out. And actually, Rauner took to Twitter to call out Emanuel, telling him that he needs to take better care of his city.
Yeah, he called it chaos after, you know, the officials in Chicago were, like, the police chief was marching with, I think, Father Flager, who was leading the march.
And so Jesse Jackson.
A very different view.
And Charlie, do you think, I mean, is this... This might be maybe a little smarter move by Rauner if he's trying to, like, you know, drive that wedge a little bit more.
Well, but on the other hand, the city and the mayor can shoot back as they did that losing social services because of the budget impasse didn't help. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the actual data, so far this year, as of this week, there had been 380, and this was at the beginning of this week, there had been 380 homicides in the city of Chicago. Last year at this time, there were 432. In 2016, through the first week of August, there were 430. In 2015, there were only 295. 16 and 17 were periods in which money for social services was not available, including anti-violence programs, job training programs in the city of Chicago. So one might argue that to the extent the budget impasse is partly the governor's fault, that certainly didn't help the situation in the city of Chicago. And now that money is flowing again to some of these violence prevention programs, the headcount, so to speak, is actually down from where it was a year ago this time. Now, the number of deaths is still horrible, although Chicago is not by any stretch the murder capital, the homicide capital of the United States. Other statistics, looking at the number of homicides per 100,000 population of large cities, Chicago is tied for ninth with Cincinnati. St. Louis, Baltimore, New Orleans, Detroit, Cleveland, they all have a higher rate of homicides.
Well, you're talking jobs in Chicago there, and that segues us to the next topic to discuss. There was some legislation signed this week. Really, it's aimed at trying to bring state jobs back to Springfield, which, of course, the home of state government, although some people might question that over the last several years as we've seen a lot more jobs shift north. Brian and Bernie, is this really going to accomplish anything? I guess that's the bottom line.
I guess maybe a little bit and eventually is how I would answer that. So far, I mean, let's just take a step back and look at the overall picture of state government employment. I went back and looked at some of the state's comprehensive annual financial reports. These are very nerdy, thick documents that sort of look at all aspects of state government and state finances, and they include a listing of the number of employees in state government. And the highest number I could find, at least going back the couple of decades that are online, was 2001. There were 89,000 people working for state government that year. Last year, that was down to 62,000. That's about a 30% decline. So most of the shrinkage in the state workforce has not been jobs moving out of in Springfield, has not been jobs moving out of Springfield. It's just been the massive attrition in state government. You know, there was the early retirement program. There was the numerous budgets that were struggling even before we went into the impasse a couple of years ago, and just a lot of positions that went unfilled. But in addition to that, previous governors, particularly under Blagojevich, moved jobs to other parts of the state. We know that Blagojevich basically ran state government out of Chicago. Bernie, you know more about this than I do. I think
he hung out at his house a lot.
Yeah, that's true. But a lot of agency heads were, and agency people were moved. There was famously an example that sticks in my head was the Division of Traffic Safety here in Springfield, which was going to be moved to Southern Illinois, which I think there was some political angle to that as well.
They ended up blocking that. But, yeah, the governor seemed to take things out on the city of Springfield a lot. And his kids were young and in school then, and he made a point to say, I want my kids to go to school in Chicago. So just not living here and then allowing, you know, not pushing as much as some other governors had to get agency directors to move to Springfield and other people. So there was a movement in that direction. I mean, this new bill, Sarah Wojcicki Jimenez is a state representative from Leland Grove, a little suburb within Springfield. It makes Springfield the default location for state jobs. So if there are state jobs that come open, agencies will have to document, you know, this will be in Springfield unless there's a good reason, and they would have to document the reason.
Such as a prison is based in, yeah, you know, somewhere else.
You can't hire somebody for the Joliet prison and have them have the job in Springfield. That's
right.
True. So we'll see. And it was nice. The governor was nice to Sarah Wojcicki Jimenez, given that she's one of the reps that voted for the budget and for the override. Because she said at the time in very emotional votes that it was so important that a state budget be enacted despite the governor's veto and continuing railing against the tax increase that now provides the money that we're spending in the budget.
Now, I do believe there's already at least some estimate, though, on jobs that could be moved back to here much sooner.
Wojcicki pointed to a report that she and other legislators had commissioned a few years ago that identified about 400, a little less than 400 jobs that can be moved back to Springfield. But this is only for new jobs or vacancies. And of course, in state government, the trend we've seen is that vacancies go unfilled. I mean, I mentioned some of the 27,000 jobs that had shrunk since 2001. Just during Governor Rauner's first 2 years in office, there were 2,000 state government jobs that were eliminated. So, or went unfilled. So that seems to be the frequent mode in state government. So whether these job vacancies that could potentially be moved back to Springfield are actually filled and moved back to Springfield, that's something that I think is more of an open question.
And Charlie, this gets back to the whole upstate, downstate, Chicago versus downstate discussions that not just here in Springfield plays across the state, I think, in different parts. But there's always been that divide, I think, of whether or not, what's the real home of state government? Where should it be?
Well, and if you want to look at it historically, it goes back more than 100 years. For more than 50 years, the state of Illinois' legislative districts were gerrymandered because after the census of 1910, the legislature did not want to redistrict because it showed Cook County had a majority of the people in the state of Illinois. And so the downstaters, those outside Cook County who controlled the legislature, just didn't bother doing any redistricting. So, yeah, there's been a long history of antipathy between the folks who don't live in Chicago and the folks who do. And so this is just a continuation of centuries-old, I guess, dispute, you might say. But another thing to look at is a lot of jobs, I think the jobs that are going to be moved back would be what one might call bureaucrats or managers. For example, one of the largest employers in the state is the Department of Corrections. Most of those people work at prisons around the state. Those jobs are going to stay there. All the people who are driver's license examiners for the Secretary of State, those jobs are going to stay in, I think Secretary of State has an office in every county. So those jobs aren't going to be moved back. But on the other hand, the people at the top level, the people who are the bureaucrats who make the decisions, those jobs will be in Springfield, which is, I think, where they should be.
And Daisy, you're from Chicago, so I'm sure maybe people in the Chicago area might view it a little bit differently. They might say, hey, state government needs to be where more people are at.
Right. I mean, a lot of them would probably say it's an opportunity for more jobs for them as well, but the rest of Illinois is probably arguing the same thing.
Just a couple of minutes left here. Brian, Bernie, if you could weigh in, too. There was a lawsuit that is has been filed now. Former IDOT workers, Department of Transportation workers, known as staff assistants, trying to get their jobs back. They had been let go. Exactly what does this stem from? What's this all about?
Yeah, well, so this is did a story on this, and I started with 2016. Governor Rauner issued a press release saying his administration had ended a, quote, patronage hiring scandal at the Illinois Department of Transportation. There were hundreds of people who'd gotten these so-called staff assistant jobs under former Governors Rob Blagojevich and Pat Quinn, Democrats both. They were political hires into jobs that it was later determined should have been protected from being political jobs. A lot of these people transferred into non-political positions, but they were still fired. And now a small number of them are suing the Rauner administration, saying that basically they were fired because they're Democrats and refused to become affiliated with the Rauner administration. And the attorney for them says that this is a violation of their First Amendment free speech rights.
Funny that this is just kind of the flip side of what happened under the Blagojevich administration. He fired a bunch of people from IDOT. I think the same lawyers were involved in representing Republicans, many of whom got their jobs back or back pay. I should also say that of the eight people suing this time, one of them is the wife of Bill Houlihan, who is Dick Durbin, the senator's top aide, and also Mr. Houlihan is on the Democratic State Central Committee. Another one is the wife of Brad Shivey, who is head of Laborers Local 477 and I think has a regional role in the Laborers Union as well. So some prominent folks who are Democratic or help Democrats.
And I assume some of these people have gone on to get other jobs since that time, maybe outside of government? Or do we know?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I mean, they're suing for back pay and reinstatement, actually. Okay. I asked about that. Do they just want a settlement or do they want their jobs back? And what their lawyer says is they actually want to be reinstated to their government positions.
All right. Time now for our notes from the field. Daisy, let's start with you.
Yeah, speaking of crime and theft in Chicago, this week the Chicago Police Department said they're taking a hard look at its use of so-called bait trucks, which are essentially easy-to-access trucks filled with goods and that are placed in low-income neighborhoods, and they arrest men for breaking into it. So community activists are saying that this creates an issue of trust with Chicago police. They're thinking about maybe not doing that in the future.
All right. And Bernie?
Well, Rodney Davis, congressman, was with Ivanka Trump when the president visited a steel mill in southern Illinois recently. And apparently in that meeting, according to what Rodney told our editorial board, he talked about the great welding program at Lewis and Clark College in Godfrey. And within days, a visit was set up. And Ivanka Trump was there with Rodney Davis and a panel of people, including Brad Shivey of the Laborers, talking about workforce training. And it was an interesting visit for Ms. Trump to talk about the good things happening in the economy, and not a bad thing for Rodney Davis for being part of that panel.
All right. And Brian.
Yeah, the Democrats are once again trying to pin Governor Rauner down on a legislative issue shortly before the election. This one has to do with legislation they're calling a gender wage equity bill. It would prohibit employers from asking job applicants about salary history. Governor Rauner vetoed a nearly identical bill last year, says he agrees with the concept but not this particular approach. He wants to make it easier for businesses to defend themselves from lawsuits. But the Democrats used a little parliamentary tactic to sit on this bill, and he's going to have to, the governor will now have to act on it just a month before the election.
He has until that time to act on it, correct?
He has until about a month before the election. But, you know, he could have dispensed with it earlier in the year if he wanted to. This puts it when a lot more people will be paying attention, presumably, to state government and politics.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and Bernie Schoenberg. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.